A podcast of the cinema.
Who are you?
I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm film reviews editor for The Wrap and a film critic and TV recapper at What the Flick on the Young Turks Network. And I'm the fill-in for Margaret Wappler for the next few months on the Pop Rocket podcast at MaximumFun.org. Who are you?
I want you to say my name.
Dave Wise.
That's right. Thank you, baby, for saying my name. I too am also a film critic. I too am also.
Yes, all the things.
I write for the Wrap. I do other things with writing somewhere sometimes, and then
we periodically appear on KCRW.
Yeah, that's a thing that happens too. We're married.
You said you hadn't flogged your audiobook in a while. Do you want to do that?
Sure, buy my audiobook.
ExileInGuyvilleBook.tumblr.com.
What a great ad that was, just there. So I have to tell you something very important.
What's that?
It's about diabetic socks.
Okay.
They're so great.
It should be noted that you do not have diabetes.
I don't.
Just the socks.
I just have these socks. I bought some new sneakers recently.
Okay.
And I said, what are your cushioniest socks? To the lady at the New Balance store. Because you know I'm a 50-something-year man, year old man, so I buy them New Balances.
Oh, yeah.
Those are the dad shoes.
I will wear nothing else.
That's how it is. She goes, we have these cushiony ones. I said, what are the cushioniest ones? She said, these. She goes, they're low elastic, tops for people with diabetes.
See,
I said, that sounds really comfortable. So I got them.
Uh-huh.
I can't stop wearing them.
Well, good, because you always wear mine, which makes me crazy, because we have very different sock philosophies.
Yes.
I like a thinner, wicky sock, even though that means a not 100% cotton sock.
Which is a terrifying prospect for me.
Well, you know, they've made great strides in the sock technology.
No, not in terms of their comfort or how they feel on your skin.
I disagree.
Socks should be cottony.
See,
and
you want your feet...
And cushiony, as though you had diabetes, even if you do not.
You want your feet like in a full bale of cotton, basically.
Yes, yes.
But then that just makes my feet get all sweaty and stuffy, and I don't like it. I like a wicking sock that takes the moisture away.
My feet don't have the sweating thing.
Well, mine do. And so here's the difference.
They're made of cold, synthetic material.
The difference is when your robot feet have gone through all of your fluffy diabetic socks,
yes,
you start wearing my wicking socks, whereas if I run out of my wicking socks, I never, ever put on your fluffy diabetic socks because I don't like them.
You should, because they're so cushiony.
Don't want them.
Also, they're very low elastic around.
So I open the drawer thinking, all right, I got a wicking sock because Dave doesn't like a wicking sock.
I'm giving you a warning.
And they're gone.
I'm giving
gone.
You... I'm giving you a warning
all
right now.
All worn by RoboFeet.
Here's the warning. That elastic rubs away the hair on your legs. You notice how older dudes always have that thing where,
starting
right
mid-calf
down, they have hairless legs.
Barren.
It's because of socks rubbing them off, like, their entire adult life. Mm-hmm. And you wonder, what's up with that old dude? Why does the hair on his legs stop? That's why.
Yeah.
Diabetic socks.
Do you think your hair is going to magically grow back now that you've discovered these magical
no,
socks?
It's never
no,
happened.
It's already too late for you. You've already been plucked.
I forgot how this related to the cinema.
You dove right into the diabetic socks.
I
don't
know
what it has to do with the cinema.
But I had it in my head for some reason that it had a reason. I guess it doesn't.
If you're a first-time listener,
This is the show. But we have movies to talk about.
We do, a ton.
There are six of them.
Yes.
Here they are. Not in alphabetical order.
Oh, we're going to be that show now where we like actually announce what we're about to do?
Maybe.
Wow. Okay.
Wouldn't that be cool if we became a millimeter more organized?
It's different. I'm not going to say better or worse.
Annabelle Creation.
Mm-hmm.
Not job. Oh, sorry. Annabelle colon Creation. Because this is a
prequel.
Yet another movie with conjurings.
Yes.
Not job two.
Mm-hmm.
Colon. Nutty by Nature.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to know if any child
gets that reference.
Gets that joke.
Probably not.
They don't.
That's for the parents.
That's for the parents. And what parent, upon hearing the words Nutty by Nature, doesn't immediately think of the song OPP? Which is a song about a side piece or two or more. That is literally a song, a celebration of the side piece.
Well,
and therefore, has nothing to do with a children's cartoon about talking squirrels.
The first nut job, you'll recall, ended with Gangnam Style.
I know it did.
Which also
which is why I refused. I refused to see this one. Mm. I left it entirely to you.
Mm.
Also, Annabelle. We're going to talk about The Only Living Boy in New York.
Oh, are we ever?
Yes, we are. The Trip to Spain,
mm-hmm.
the third
yes.
of the Trip movies,
mm-hmm.
the documentary Whose Streets,
yep.
and the new film from Michael Almereyda, Escapes.
Yes.
Let's begin and get it out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Nut Job 2, Nutty by Nature. This is going to take exactly 3 to 5 minutes. I'm timing you.
If you saw The Nut Job, you'll recall that it ended with all of the squirrels and their pug friend living happily in the basement of the abandoned nut shop, which was nonetheless loaded with nuts and magically no vermin that would make those nuts go bad.
I would like to interrupt you right now and tell you that I did see the first Nut Job movie.
And you remember nothing.
And I remember nothing, and here's why. It was garbage.
I was reminded of the ending of the movie by the beginning of this movie.
Otherwise, I see.
I could not have answered a quiz on this
last interview. Time on The Nut Job.
Yes.
These dumb talking animals that had nothing to do in the first movie other than stand around and say funny things while dudes robbed the nut store
something, or I think they bought the nut store so they could drill into
it's
the bank
a front
next door
to the
something.
Bank robbery they were committing.
Very big deal
know.
On Madonna Street.
What a
anyway so this
rotten movie
this time the nut store blows up in the first 5 minutes because
okay.
The dumb mole didn't do a good enough job watching the boiler.
Great.
So they go back to the park, but the park is being torn up by the corrupt mayor. And how no one guesses that this mayor is corrupt when his vanity license plate says, like, embezzler. who decides that he's going to put in an unsafe amusement park.
That makes me laugh.
To make more money for the town. So they go across town to see if they can find another park they can live in. But that one's been turned into a golf course. And that's, like, a horror show. So they don't want to live there. And then they find, like, these kung fu mice that are led by Jackie Chan, and
right.
then they have to disrupt the theme park, and okay. blah, 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 blah.
Is that really it? They're just looking for a new place to live?
Basically.
And do they foil the plans of the bad
yes.
man?
They it's basically, this movie is Pompoko for dummies.
Mm.
Because the squirrels have to, like, drive the humans out. They first sabotage like the bulldozers and stuff, but then the park winds up going up anyway, and then they have to like escape from the exterminator and like sabotage the park and make it all dangerous so people run fleeing from it.
Do they have giant balls like the raccoons in Pompoko?
Sadly, no.
All right. I want to see it even less
yes.
now than
yeah.
the no amount of enthusiasm I would have
made Pompoko,
that I already had.
I would have made Pompoko my DVD pick of the week, but I think I've already
You've
done
probably
that.
Probably done that before, but you should see Pompoko.
But yeah, I'm going to just throw out as a recommendation, watch Pompoko. It's one of my favorite of the Studio Ghibli films. Not a Hayao Miyazaki joint, but the other
Is
guy.
Is this movie
Isao
better?
Takahata.
Sorry. Is this movie better or worse than the first one?
I'm going to say marginally better.
It could only go up.
Yeah, because the first one was just so aggressively stupid and irritating. This one was a little bit better. But one of the big problems with it is the lead squirrel, Surly, for those of you keeping track at home.
Voiced by...
Will Arnett.
Okay.
Will Arnett is currently doing two of the best cartoon voices in the culture right now.
And those are?
BoJack Horseman.
That's
on
correct.
Netflix.
Yes.
And Lego Batman.
Oh, you're right. He's Lego Batman.
He's really good at both of those.
Right.
He is so not being paid enough to give a whit about Surly Squirrel.
Right.
It is so phoned in, kind of warmed over Job Bluth, you know,
right.
arrogance.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like at one point, you know, his friend almost dies and he has to be all like moved about it. And, no.
Does the friend actually die?
No.
Stupid movie.
Of course. You know, and then Katherine Heigl is stuck playing, like, oh, you know, man. It's the movie where, like, the guys do all the sort of, like, crazy anarchic stuff. And she's like, we need to put away acorns for the winter.
Right. Why didn't they let her be the voice of the villain lady or something?
Yeah, well.
She's so good at that.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
Katherine Heigl is the Lady Kevin Spacey in that she is best when we don't have to like her.
When she's mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, or maniacal and murderous.
Yeah.
Like in Unforgettable.
For instance.
Make that your DVD pick. It's just out now on DVD.
I didn't see it.
Oh, you did. Man. That's my DVD pick of the week. Unforgettable, you guys. It was going to be Michael Almereyda's Experimenter.
Yes.
Maybe it's both. I picked two DVDs this week because there are weeks sometimes when you say what's your DVD pick and I think out loud, oh, I forgot to pick one. Which has happened.
Yes. Pick one for
so
you.
So here are two of them. Michael Almereyda's. Oh, look. We're almost done talking about the nut job. I did time you. Michael Almereyda's Experimenter, which yes. came out a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Unforgettable with Katherine Heigl as the mean...
as the single white female.
Cruel single white female, yeah.
Well, I'm still saving my actual DVD pick for the end when it's supposed to happen.
Well, I just didn't.
Fine. All right, so yeah.
We're officially done with talking
I got nothing
about
else to say about that.
Terrible film that is marginally...
An improvement.
Yeah. Okay.
You're steering the ship. Now, what next?
Why don't we talk about The Trip to Spain?
Okay.
Because this is a film that we have both seen and that we can both agree on.
Yes.
It's terrific.
It is. We got to go back and revisit the TV show. And I know you've missed some of these movies because you would rather see
I missed
the TV show.
The second one, The Trip to Italy, because I was holding out for the possibility of seeing yeah. the television version, very much like the television version of the original film, The Trip. Which I did not know was a television series.
Yeah.
All I knew was that it had been chopped up into an American film.
They managed to keep
and
that...
And I didn't know that until after I saw it.
Yeah, like, yeah. I think most people don't know that The Trip is a TV show in the UK, because here it is like, they just always package them as movies, and I know the first Trip was on Amazon Prime for a while. I don't know if the yeah. other two are, but... yeah, we don't get the six-hour version that the folks in the UK do. We get these two-hour movies, but I think they're delightful anyway. The premise is Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon playing, quote, themselves, unquote.
Well, kind of, yeah.
Going on these journeys where they go to a bunch of restaurants and they're ostensibly supposed to be writing about food, but we never really see them do that. But it's about sort of their middle-aged anxieties and you know, kind of their competition with each other as performers. And if you are a Patreon subscriber, by the way, we have Margie Rockland on Linoleum Knife and Fork this week.
Yes.
Who interviewed the director of the films, Michael Winterbottom.
Who has some
interesting things to say about how the restaurants get picked and the stars' relationships with the food that they eat. But... you'll have to go to patreon.com/linoleumknife and become a $7 or more subscriber to hear that episode. So the first one they drive around England. The second one was the trip to Italy. Obviously now they're in Spain, and I was kind of mentally taking notes of places I want to go and things I want to do. For starters,
yeah.
Next time we go to Spain, since they don't have the that auto train anymore that we took from Paris to Madrid.
That was so good.
It was. But next time, we go to London.
Right.
And then we'll take that ferry.
Yeah.
Because that ferry looked pretty swank.
I've taken the ferry. I took the ferry from England to Belgium.
Right.
It was a little woozy. Also, it was 1989.
I was going to say, I'm sure it's...
It wasn't as nice as I'm sure it is now.
Yeah. And the ferry they take to wherever it lands in Spain...
right.
...seemed pretty posh, or at least there was a posh option. You could pay for posh.
When have
posh.
We ever had the posh option? Well,
the hotel train was the posh option.
The hotel train was simply the option.
No, we could have flown, and we didn't. We took the train from Paris to Madrid, and it was overnight.
Because I didn't want to fly anymore.
Fine. We ate two meals on cloth tablecloths.
In a dining car.
In a dining car.
Pretty dope.
That was a pretty posh option.
It was pretty good. Yeah.
Even though the sleeper car itself was pretty tiny.
Teeny tiny.
Anyway, so Ryde and Coogan are you know, on the road and eating chorizo and impersonating Michael Caine and impersonating Mick Jagger impersonating Michael Caine. And
if you're listening for the first time, the fact that Mr. Duralde just said chorizo instead of chorizo is not him being pretentious.
Yes.
He's Spanish.
It is true.
From actual... Descended from a mother and father from actual Spain.
My parents were both born in Spain.
Yeah.
So
that's how he talks.
I speak it a Castilian.
There you go.
So I have to say, I really want you to see Trip to Italy at some point because it's my favorite of the three. I think it holds together. I think it's the funniest and it holds together the most sort of dramatically as far as the
right.
arc that they send these two characters on. This one was pretty good, and I mean,
yeah.
consistently funny. It ends in a way that's odd, but
well, it's setting up
the next one,
another one,
but I liked it a lot, and I like this series a lot. Matt Singer at Screen Crush called this like our best franchise right now.
I'd agree.
And unless like Linklater and Julie Delpy and
have
another before in them,
right.
I'm inclined to agree. Yeah. So, yeah, people should see it.
I have been looking up the TV versions mm-hmm. of this, and there was a second series, a six-episode trip to Italy.
Uh-huh.
And also a trip to Spain.
Right.
Yeah. So...
But can we get them?
I don't know how. I mean, well, we have an all-region Blu-ray.
Oh, that's
now,
true. We could get the... Yeah, go to Amazon.
Well, I will when we're done recording.
Oh, fine. Like you haven't just been researching other things.
Well, you were talking.
Oh, I see.
You were talking, and I was paying attention and double-tasking. Like I always do. Like uh-huh. I'm so good at.
All right. Well, what are your thoughts about Trip to Spain?
I really enjoyed it, even though I still have not yet seen Trip to Italy. I like these guys.
Yes.
I don't know if I would like it if it weren't these two particular guys.
Oh, no, definitely. And I because there's something about their sort of naked vulnerability hidden by their sort of preening arrogance at times. It's really entertaining. And I have to say, when they talked about 50 being the sweet spot, having just turned 50 myself.
Do you feel like you're in the sweet spot right now? You do, don't you? You're great.
I guess I always feel like I'm in a sweet spot.
I'm telling you that your life is a sweet spot.
Wherever I am,
it's because of me. Obviously, boy. I like these two characters.
Yeah.
I mean, they're clearly not
really them.
They're not playing themselves in any.
They're playing the worst versions of themselves.
Well, they're playing the openly
needy,
ambitious, difficult. Selfish versions of themselves.
Steve Coogan keeps dragging Philomena into conversations.
Right. Right. And if I was supposed to admire them as characters or aspire to anything in their life aside from the fact that they get to eat at the most kick-ass restaurants throughout Europe, then I would find it off-putting.
Right.
Because screw you, rich guys. Like, you know what I mean? That's how I always feel about this. I like that Michael Winterbottom lets them roll out what they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my understanding is that Winterbottom is really into the food.
Right.
And these guys just don't care about the food, like Margie was telling us on the show the other day.
I'd be fascinated to know how much is written, because it feels so improvisational.
It really does feel improvisational.
I mean, there's some structure going on, and obviously there are scenes that are that move the plot such as it is ahead. Like, there's a whole subplot here regarding Coogan's agent that doesn't ever quite come to a
it doesn't
fulfillment that I would have that I thought would have been interesting. But but so like that stuff is obviously scripted and where other actors are involved. But a lot of the stuff between them just feels so off the cuff that I kind of wonder, like, if it's one of those, I don't know if it's a Mike Lee thing where they pre-plan stuff,
right,
or if it's a thing where, like, okay, in this scene, this has to be communicated.
Yeah.
And then everything else can just be Michael Caine and, you know, go, and go with
Mick
it.
Jagger impersonations.
Yeah.
Which
the
Coogan's Jagger and Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
Are
and his Anthony Hopkins.
I'm gonna say his Jagger, though, is the best.
His Jagger is pretty amazing. But Jagger doing Hamlet or King Lear or whatever it was. Some Shakespeare. It was hysterical.
So, yeah, this is thoroughly enjoyable. I'm ready for another one.
Oh, totally, yeah.
I know there'll be another one.
Yeah.
I mean, what a cushy job.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have to drive around. I have to drive around this country and eat.
Well,
and just goof off.
The idea that Michael Winterbottom gets to go, like, research first and try all the restaurants.
Oh, yeah.
That's
I know.
That's the gig.
On the BBC's dime,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So, I guess there's a limited release this week?
Yeah, but it'll be expanding, I'm sure.
Okay. All right. Do your bit with Annabelle : Creation.
Okay.
I love horror films. And I have lost my patience with the Conjuring universe. And I no longer care. I especially no longer care about a spooky doll. Because I've never liked spooky dolls. Because they aren't frightening. About them is scary.
I feel like the Conjuring universe is unfolding fairly organically compared to this whole dark universe thing that Universal is trying to foist upon us that nobody seems to want. I dig the Conjuring movies. I am a much softer touch than you are with
horror. You sure are.
But I find the Conjuring movies scary. I think they're
here's what's most fun about a Conjuring movie: sitting next to you. The time, I've already talked about this on the show once before, but the time I sat between you and Alinda Wheat at the first Conjuring movie.
On
the Warner lot.
No, I saw the first Conjuring movie at the LA Film Festival with Tom Ford and Justin Chang, and we all leapt together.
Well, who was sitting on the other side of me with Alinda? Was it Christy? It might have been.
Maybe, yeah.
Anyway, y'all some jumpy-ass people.
Yeah, it's true. So, you know,
she kept grabbing me, like grabbing my body through the whole movie, like, please, my friend, you must stop doing this.
The Conjuring scared the crap out of me. I thought Conjuring 2 was pretty scary. I did not see the first Annabelle because everybody said it was terrible. But this Annabelle is pretty good.
Why?
Because it is, because it's suspenseful. It is.
Okay.
And it's not.
What's it about? An orphanage?
We open on Anthony LaPaglia and Miranda Otto, and they have a young daughter. And she dies in an accident.
And her name was Annabelle Creation.
Yes. They're the Creation family. 10 years later, they open up their house to these orphans from an orphanage who come with a nun. A nice nun, not the evil nun from Conjuring 2. And
wait. So there's a new nun.
There's a new nun.
A nice nun.
A nice nun.
Not the Marilyn Manson nun.
Not the Marilyn Manson.
From the other Conjuring movie. Okay.
And they move into the house and they're told, like, you know, don't go into the bedroom. My wife has been bedridden for a long time and, like, don't open this locked room. Naturally, they do. And, of course, it turns out that their daughter has been haunting the house and came into the doll, which LaPaglia had made. He used to make toys. And awful things happened, and awful things began happening again. The main girl, the ghost girl is targeting, is this girl with polio, so she's got, like, you know, a limp and, you know, braces and crutches and the whole thing. The girl from, this is in the way that the second Ouija movie was actually better than the first one. I think this one is better than the first Annabelle. And right. the little girl from the second Ouija movie is in this one, too.
Okay.
So, Lulu something. She's great. And she's very good in these kinds of movies. I was scared. I had a good time. I was scared. And even if you hated the first Annabelle, I thought Bibbs put it very well, where he said, let's rank the Conjuring movies.
Why? Why do we need to do that?
Okay, will you let me finish this
thing? I will.
Without being a butt?
No, I'll try.
Shut your butt.
I.
He was like, 1, The Conjuring. 2, Annabelle Creation. 3, Conjuring 2. 4, TBD. 5, TBD. 6, Annabelle.
Do we know that there are going to be 6 films?
Well, they've announced the Nun movie and the Crooked
Nun.
Oh,
good. The Marilyn Manson Nun gets its own movie.
Yes. And there are references to Marilyn Manson Nun in this
film. What's the other one? You said The Crooked Man?
The Crooked Man from Conjuring 2.
Oh, God. I'm tired. I'm really just tired of it. I love horror. This is driving me crazy.
Well, you know what? There must be a lot of horror wusses out there.
There
because
must be.
If I have to see a horror franchise of something, this would be the one.
I like the first Conjuring movie.
Okay. And that was it?
The end.
Fine. Well, this one's not for you then.
Here's what's
it's
not.
It's for everyone else in America.
Here's how you know if your house is possessed by a spooky doll. It ain't.
Yes, obviously.
Yeah. And
that doesn't mean ghost stories can't be scary.
They better be real damn scary. Like in a skin crawl out of your skin kind of way. Because the level of disbelief that I have to get over is a high level. I was trying to think of a clever way to say that. Yeah. And I just couldn't.
It's very, very big.
It's very, very big, that level. Yes. All right, sure, fine. You know what? Maybe it'll come on TV sometime and I'll be ironing.
Annabelle Creation does not need your pity. It's doing just fine.
No, I know. It made a load of money this weekend.
It did.
Good for you, Annabelle Creation.
I saw a trailer for Jigsaw. Don't want to see that.
Is this young, sexy Jigsaw?
I don't know. I don't know if it's a reboot or a prequel or what, but I never saw any of the Saw movies.
I saw all of them.
I don't feel like starting.
I saw all the Saw movies.
And again, Bibbs, our friend William Bibbiani,
yes,
late of the B-Movies podcast, currently of Canceled Too Soon.
Yes.
Either he or his co-host Whitney did this whole lengthy article explaining what order those movies go in.
They don't go in a order of their existence?
Nope.
Who cares?
The Saw movies apparently all loop in and out of each other.
Don't care. Just like to see people get their heads chopped off in creative ways.
Very
well. Or having to chop off their own heads in creative ways.
Well,
that's the beauty of Jigsaw. He makes you do all kinds of gnarly stuff to you. You kill you.
I went to Annabelle Creation. You go to Jigsaw. And report back.
I want it to be young, hot Jigsaw.
Well, he's going to have the mask on either way, right?
I don't know. I want it to be kind of sexy before the mutilations begin. I don't think there's anything wrong with needing a little romance before
before the torture. You're the worst.
So
tell me about this Almereyda movie.
Escapes.
Yes.
Well, up until this film came out, have you ever heard of Hampton Fancher?
Not really.
You haven't.
Well,
Other than
he wrote Blade Runner.
He wrote Blade Runner.
So I'm sure it's name I encountered and sort of bleeped over and never thought about again.
Well, he has also recently written the new Blade.
2049 or
the
whatever?
New Blade Runner.
Okay.
Yes. But before he wrote Blade Runner, and after he wrote Blade Runner, what did you think about him? Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah, okay. Well, Michael Almereyda, who is a very cool and unusual filmmaker.
He did the Ethan Hawke Hamlet.
Yes.
He did that odd vampire movie, Nadia.
Mm-hmm.
He did Experimenter.
Nadia is a cool movie.
Yeah, he's done a lot of, I don't know what the through line is necessarily, but he's got an interesting career.
Yeah, I can't quite put my finger on him in terms of, oh yes, this is a Michael Almereyda film.
Right.
Other than, now that I've seen Experimenter and this one, sort mm-hmm. of, I won't say back to back, but within a year or two of each other.
Uh-huh.
He loves the formal qualities of film, and he loves letting you know that you are inside a movie. That was at least part of Experimenter.
Right, definitely.
And it is also a part of this film.
And it bears noting he has another movie coming out this month.
This month, yes.
I think this week, actually, Marjorie Prime opens.
Yeah, which I have not heard a dang thing about in terms of press screenings, have you?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Well, I thought...
But you didn't pass it on to me.
I will. I thought you were on this list.
Thanks for being helpful, husband. Anyway, What is really cool about this one visually is that he is using film clips and stock images and, a little animation here and there, juxtaposing all of these images. Some of them are directly related to Hampton Fancher, and some of them are just sort of associative. And... This creates not only the story, but sort of the tone of the film, which is meant to be, and successfully is, the unpredictability of a life that has been undertaken by this man. And he intentionally went out and created this wild life for himself. When he was a kid... he was born in Los Angeles in the late 30s. He's 70 now, or almost, he's almost 80.
No, 80.
No, he's almost 80 now. Born in Los Angeles. When he was 11, he said to his folks, guess what, I'm quitting school. So he did. And he decided he was going to go off to Spain and become a flamenco dancer. And then he decided he was going to come back and become a movie star. And
this is after being 11, I assume.
Yes. As a young man, he came back and was like, I'm going to be a movie star. Along the way, apparently, on the boat, he met Marlon Brando. And Brando was like, I'd like to have dinner with you. Like, that sort of life where fantastical things seem to happen to you.
Where you're Forrest Gump.
Where, yeah. Only you've actively sought out...
that kind of existence.
That kind of existence.
Yeah.
And he comes back to Los Angeles and he does not become a movie star. However, because he is pretty handsome, he becomes a reliable bit player in TV shows.
Huh.
Here are some of those shows. Adam 12, Mannix, Daniel Boone, The Monroes, Bonanza, Perry Mason, Gunsmoke, Rawhide, 77 Sunset Strip, Father Knows Best.
Do we see clips of these?
There are many, many more. Oh, yeah, we see clips of all of these. We see him. We see his credit credit title cards, you know, seventh on the on the cast. He's just some guy. He's just some handsome kind of dude.
He played Irate Man.
And he also was the kind of person who, if he didn't feel like being in a project of any sort, he just wouldn't. He was involved with Terry Garr for a while.
Oh.
And she, he describes her.
Like circa Head?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He describes her as a go-getter. She would do anything. You name it. They would say, Terry Garr, we want you to go dance on this...
Hullabaloo.
We want you to go dance on Hullabaloo. She's like, yes, I will. And so she did that. And you see all these pictures, all these clips of Terry Garr dancing here, dancing there, dancing on live stage shows with, you know, whoever did that song, Going to a Go-Go. Like, she's she's dancing behind them. She was ambitious.
Yeah.
She had a plan. She was going somewhere, and she didn't care what it took to get there. He, on the other hand, was that guy who would say things like, doesn't speak to me. But he just kept having a cool life.
Yeah, well, women have to work twice as hard to get taken half as seriously.
That's correct. So, the bulk of the film is him narrating these lengthy, digressive stories. You think I digress?
I do.
This guy will take you down a wild labyrinth of a path. and in the service of telling you a story that may have begun with some point and then ends with some other point, but you're fascinated the whole time. You just want to keep hearing him talk.
Does he appear in the film currently?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it like a static shot, or is it...
Well, it's him sitting in a chair, you know. It's not like a talking head thing, because there's so much other visual information going on as he narrates.
I'm thinking like of that De Palma documentary, where every time they get back to De Palma, it's the same shot of him in the same chair.
These are different shots.
Okay.
Yeah.
What does the title mean?
Escapes?
Yeah.
Well...
Or is that a giveaway? Is that a spoiler?
Everything he's done in his life...
I see.
...has been, I'm done with this. Time to go somewhere else. Ah. Time to do something else. I'm done being married to Sue Lyon. I'm going to go get involved with Terry Garr. I'm done being involved with Terry Garr. I'm going to go get involved with Barbara Hershey.
Oh, my.
I'm done being friends with the guy from Flipper because he got in a motorcycle accident. I'm done. That's not true. he stayed friends with the actor Brian Kelly, who was the sexy dad on Flipper.
Mm.
Yeah. He actually kind of tended to Brian Kelly for a while and made him an executive producer on Blade Runner to help him out, because his career ended after that motorcycle accident.
Sure,
he was paralyzed from that point forward. So it is a fascinating movie about a guy you didn't know really anything about, whose life is not especially important, other than that he wrote Blade Runner, and but whose existence is the kind of Hollywood story that a lot of people come here hoping to have.
It's kind of like The Kid Stays in the Picture.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's wonderful. Even if halfway through the movie you start thinking,
but he's a jerk.
Sometimes I think maybe a little bit of a jerk, but a charming one, and I can see how you got over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How you pulled it off.
And it's very cool.
Hmm.
It's very cool. It's very involving. It's short. It's only 90 minutes. Hmm. And I recommend it.
All right.
Yeah.
Is it getting much of a release, do we know?
It opened in Los Angeles this weekend at the New Art, one screen.
Right.
I assume it's also playing in New York.
I think it opened there last week.
Okay. So it'll,
it'll make its way around.
It'll slowly roll out to wherever it rolls out.
Or you'll be streaming it in no time.
Right. Now, we also both saw...
Da-ba-doo-da-da-da-ba-doo-da-ba-doo-da-da-da.
The only living boy in New York. Well, Candy Bones strikes again.
Our favorite bad writer.
What's his name? Alan Loeb.
He's made a bunch of
He's a screenwriter. He's not a director.
No,
he's a screenwriter.
He made a bunch of terrible Adam Sandler movies, but who hasn't? But in the last year, Alan Loeb has delivered unto the American movie-going public Collateral Beauty.
And how?
The Space Between Us, a.k.a. Candy Bones.
Candy Bones.
And now, The Only Living Boy in New York.
Do you know there's an actual candy called Candy Bones?
Is there?
Yeah, somebody sent me a picture of it this week.
Is it like a skeleton or something?
Yeah, it's a candy skeleton.
Nice.
And that was the whole point of The Space Between Us. The Earth boy who was raised on Mars, who now has Mars
gravity bones.
Mars gravity delicate bones that will shatter or disintegrate or melt or something when he comes to Earth.
Yes.
And I jokingly said they were made of candy that would dissolve, and he named him Candy Bones and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, why don't you tell people about the story of the only living boy in New York?
Brother. All right. So, this very sensitive 20-something.
Very precocious and knows more about everything than everybody.
Yes. Okay. So clever.
Played by Callum Turner.
Yes.
Who, a young man I'm not entirely familiar with.
He plays grown-up Bill in Queen and Country, which was the John Borman's sequel to...
He's Open British. Glory. Playing American here.
He is, like, he's got model cheekbones, but he wears glasses in this movie, so, you know, he's just like a...
Well, you know, he was a model.
You don't say.
Yeah, he was a model for Burberry.
Yeah.
Back well, in the back
he's
in
basically
the
still a model, but he wears glasses in this movie, so you know that he's like a human being
mm-hmm.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he just doesn't know what to do with his life. I mean, he's a writer, but his father never encourages writing because his father was a failed writer himself who became a publisher, and he's played by Pierce Brosnan, and he's married to Cynthia Nixon, who we're constantly told is so fragile. So fragile.
Right.
Can't upset her because she's so fragile.
She's very fragile.
And around the time...
Her bones are also made of candy. That's the through line.
Exactly. So much candy bones. Around the time that Jeff Bridges moves into Callum Turner's apartment building as a sort of boozy father confessor.
Right.
The guy realizes that Pierce Brosnan is cheating on mommy with sexy, but brilliant... Kate Beckinsale, who is like a book editor. And so the son starts tailing her, but he's terrible at it, so she catches him immediately. And he tries to get her to stop seeing his father, and she says she won't. And then they start having an affair, but she's still sleeping with the father anyway.
Uh-huh.
And he's pouring his heart out to Jeff Bridges. And then, of course, things happen. And if you've seen this, if you've seen Collateral Beauty and or... Candy Bones.
You know something's coming.
You know something's coming. You know there's a third act, like, boing, reveal-o-matic waiting to be unpacked.
And I wish that this one had revealed something truly outlandish.
Yeah.
When in practice here, it really just revealed something dopey and coincidental, and you should have seen it coming.
Right.
And I won't give it away, because unlike
Collateral Beauty
and Candy Bones, this film is simply dull.
Yeah, it's not
it
even... It's not the kind
of fun
bad movie that we would spoil because the spoiler is a selling point. This one's just...
Like, you might go see this because you like one of these actors, so I won't give away the ending, even though it's just dopey and...
Yeah. I felt
pointless.
I felt, as much as I like just about everybody in this cast, including Kiersey Clemons, who plays the unattainable girl.
Yep.
I really felt bad for Kate Beckinsale because she is great when given the chance to be great, as in Love and Friendship.
Yep.
But she, this character is such a like male fantasy of a sexed up, intellectual, sexually available lady.
I can only imagine young heterosexual men watching this movie and thinking, that.
I'm entitled to that.
I'm not only am I entitled to that, but she's dating my dad. Let me get in there and show her.
Yeah,
you
how
know,
it's really done.
How it's really done. Like, okay.
And the movie...
I know someone
The movie blissfully coasts over all of that, by the way. The notion that, like, that she's sleeping with the dad and the son... Like,
at the same time.
At the same time,
yeah.
It is barely reflected upon.
Yeah. That's like a penthouse letter.
Yes.
And which is in, totally in keeping with this ridiculous fantasy scenario.
I seduced my father's mistress.
Yeah. The, like, I know someone that this really happened to. Yeah, and but they didn't know, and very much like in this film, they didn't know. The woman knew, but they, the father and son didn't know. Uh-huh. Until much later. And
I want to hear all about this off mic.
And then they kind of high-fived each other about it, apparently. But, you know, listen, straight guys, you're the worst. You know you are. Fess up. But the
a much better movie about this same thing is the very trashy Go Naked in the World with Gina Lola Brigida and Ernest Borgnine.
How come I've never seen this movie?
You should. It's in Bad Movies We Love.
I gotta see that.
I think the son is Tony Franciosa.
Of course.
Yes.
Who else? This is just boring and silly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, shot impeccably in that impeccable New York movie kind of way.
It's the fancy literary art-filled New York you want to go to and stay in and ignore everybody while you're there, but get access to the good...
Stay in a really great apartment.
Yeah, apartments and dinners.
where Wallace Shawn and Debbie Mazar show up to
drop... Oh, and Andung.
Yeah.
You never see her in films unless they're really trying to convey... Like high end art world, New York,
Manhattan.
She's been in like 9 movies over 30 years. Like she doesn't care. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I don't.
She was also in. Oh God, I'd have to go look it up.
Like Basquiat.
She was in High Art.
Okay.
And I Shot Andy Warhol.
Okay.
So you know.
I got you.
You. she's like an interview magazine. World
she
person.
She handled the crystal Tina Chow spent 10 grand to buy.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, if you haven't seen Collateral Beauty or The Space Between Us, those are rollicking good bad times.
Hilarious.
Yeah. This one is not.
No. This was apparently the script that put this guy on the map. If you read his also hilarious IMDb profile / bio page, this was the movie, this was the script that sort of saved his career and you know, I think it was on like the blacklist and made him all hot.
What good movies have been on the blacklist?
I don't know, but a lot of terrible ones have.
That's what I'm asking.
It's become a caveat now when I hear, ooh, it's on the blacklist. Oh, really?
Don't tell me about that.
Oh,
then.
Dear.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Whose Streets.
Yes.
There's a documentary about the...
Ferguson Uprising.
Ferguson Uprising, yes. From directors Sabah Folayan, I'm pronouncing this name completely incorrectly, I'm sure, and Damon Davis. Mm-hmm. They co-directed it. And it follows... They were there.
Yeah.
They were right there when it was happening. They were there and they had their cameras. How they didn't get crushed, beaten, you know, tear gassed.
Maybe they looked like media?
I don't know. But
I mean, also
they are right there in the middle of it.
The thing is, and this movie also does get a lot of footage from people's phones.
It does.
So there's a real sort of you are there kind of thing. Basically, it's in the days following the police shooting of Michael Brown, and then later following the non-indictment of the officer who shot Michael Brown.
Yes,
they are in the streets of Ferguson, sort of following the conflicts with police. And you know, this was a movie that we saw earlier this week and was already sort of powerful and relevant and important to see. And now following this weekend, when with the Charlottesville stuff that went down,
right.
It is essential viewing.
This is a vital
because
film to see.
For people who want to tell you that Black Lives Matter are just the same as like these torch-wielding Nazis.
They are lying.
That is a lie.
They are lying or they have been misinformed.
Yes. And if you think that the police respond the same to Black Lives Matter protesters or torch-wielding Nazis, they do not.
They don't. And because this film is so immediate and so harrowing to watch, you feel such fear and despair, you know, for the folks that they've chosen to follow.
Right.
And just worry. I spent the last 30 minutes afraid for, what is her name? The young woman who's the nurse, the lesbian.
Oh, right. I know who you mean.
I'm sorry, I'm blanking on her name. Literally peaceful protesting.
Yeah.
That turns completely upside down. Now, I want to make this very clear. By peaceful, I mean not committing violent acts toward other human beings.
Right.
I don't mean being intimidating. I don't mean being loud. I don't mean
damaging
property. None of that is violent.
What is violent is when you have the character in the film who, like, unloads this backpack of spent tear gas canisters and spent rubber bullets and, like, all this stuff that the cops are shooting at towards
peaceful protesters. Yes.
It's horrifying.
The violence comes from the police in this film. And that was what everyone kept saying was happening in Ferguson. And the media kept saying, you know, violence broke out when these protesters decided to throw a brick through a window and, you know, loot a store. No. The violence comes from the police in these situations. It just does. The police kill innocent people. And then when people protest, they use more violence to squash the protest.
Yes.
And that keeps happening. And there's a problem. I say this as a person who has a family member who is a police officer. He is not the kind of police officer that I think is bad. He wants to do good things in his community. However, in the United States, this keeps happening.
Yes. This is a problem.
This is a problem with law enforcement. That, is there any progress being made to fix it? I don't see any.
I don't know.
So
it feels like a conversation we keep having to have.
It is a conversation we keep having to have, and it's a conversation you and I keep having as white people who live in a country predicated on white supremacy.
Yes. This movie, I think, goes a long way towards...
Do you want to get in there and get personal with what the story was about? Yeah, this is the film.
Exactly. And I think it, you know, I compare it to Detroit because it affected me in the same way in terms of, it's one thing to sort of know this is happening and be aware of the news and these things. But yeah, when you're that close, up close and personal with it, it you know, like the Ebert quote that everybody always cites, it creates empathy. It plunges you into that situation, and that makes all the difference, and it makes it that much more real and vital.
The protests and marches and demonstrations that I've been a part of in my life, and I can't count the number of ones. They've primarily been about queer issues.
Mm-hmm.
And something has changed in the past 50 years or more. In the way that most police departments seem to treat groups of queer people demonstrating.
Mm-hmm.
In general...
I would say in the past 25 to 30 years.
In general, the treatment... Well, I'm just talking as a continuum.
Uh-huh.
From beating your head in at Stonewall to now. Okay.
Sure.
In general, they treat us pretty well.
Yeah.
But
also those
that doesn't mean that the police are your friends if you're queer. But it just means that when there's a big organized demonstration, we tend to get
It's a big demonstration of white people.
Correct. That's where I was going next.
When after Prop 8 passed and I was part of a demonstration that happened at the Mormon church and we marched through Westwood, we got a police escort.
Yeah.
You know, the women's march in downtown LA. Not a single arrest.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But again,
And people were crowing about that,
yes,
as though that were an accomplishment on their part, and that's not the fact.
No.
The case is that the police monitor that situation differently.
Yes.
They're not coming for you.
Yeah. So I think you and I and people like us,
yes,
need to start going to more Black Lives Matter events, if that's what it takes to make the police behave differently, to have more white faces, then more white faces need to show up at that stuff.
Yes.
You know, sadly, that's where we are.
Yes. How many theaters has this film opened in?
Is it also
on demand, like right away?
I don't know. It's Magnolia. I think it's opening in a few cities, and it's going to be expanding in the coming weeks.
I see.
But yeah, absolute must seeing. A very, very powerful film.
Yeah.
We have some letters.
We got some letters. Do you have a?
Oh, my DVD pick?
What's your DVD
pick? It's The Trip to Italy. it's the Empire Strikes Back of the Trip trilogy so far. But I definitely want to go back and see if we can find the full TV version.
I want it.
But even the American theatrical edit is really great. It was one of my top 10 films that year, and I think it is the best of what these movies do and how they do it.
This is from Mike. The recent talk about people reacting to film scenes in particular ways brought up my long-ago memory of seeing the 1982 Michael Caine, Christopher Reeve, Diane Cannon movie Death Trap in the theater when it was new. I was 18 and went with my gay best friend. Reeve and Caine are secret gay lovers who plot to kill Caine's rich wife, that's Diane Cannon, for her money. When they reached in for their first kiss of the movie, a young female voice I couldn't see screamed, "Don't do it, Superman." This highly amused us young queens. Mike. Remember that disco song called Superman?
Oh, yeah. I love you, Superman, man.
And the lyrics were like, "Do it to me, Superman."
Yes.
So.
There you go.
She really should have been yelling, "Do it to me, Superman." Do it to him.
Yeah, there you go.
Superman.
To Michael Caine.
Hey, David Alonzo. This is from Reese. 5 years after sending my email to you all about damage control, it has finally entered into the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yay!
Via Spider-Man Homecoming. I was audibly excited when I saw this unfolding. I've read this letter already.
Have you?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Why would I still have it?
I don't know.
Are you sure I didn't read it to you personally?
Maybe. Oh, here's the rest. I'll reread it. Maybe I did read it already, but who cares? You're going to hear it twice. Oh, yeah. Superman is great. Spider-Man is great, too. It is a John Hughes movie mixed with a Marvel and a United Colors of Benetton ad. Finally, an actor that looks like a teenager and not an adult man pretending. Reese. I swear I read that letter before.
So. And then Reed has...
Because the Benetton Reese reference
has
is
a,
what...
Reese has a follow-up.
Sticks in my head. I typically don't mention my race in an email, but maybe I should have my last email to give my comments a bit of context. I am a black male, and my use of United Colors of Benetton when referring to Spider-Man Homecoming was giving the movie high praise and not knocking it in any way. Well, we assumed it was praise.
Yes.
Yeah.
But thank you for the clarification nonetheless.
Oh, look at here. Reviews.
Yes.
iTunes reviews.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you liked to read these. You want me to read it?
I now get them in letter form, so I'm sending them to you.
This is from Angry LA Driver.
No.
Minnie? Minnie, is that you?
I'm sure Millie, she's got a hit show on ABC. She's probably being driven.
Maybe. I saw her driving one day.
I know.
Thought it was great. Minnie Driver is driving.
If only she were driving a Minnie.
I love, love, love everything about this podcast, as well as all of the others, LKTV, Linoleum Knife and Fork, and Linoleum Knights. These guys are brimming with personality, prickly as they may be, and they find their way to movies, television, biscuits, in a manner that suggests a deep love of the experience. I don't always agree with their film reviews, but I always understand them. Not every film critic brings their life into their opinions. Dave and Alonzo recognize that a review is a review is a review, but a review coupled with everything that they are brought with everything that they are brought into the mix, makes for indelible edification.
Ooh.
Thanks for making my morning and evening commutes such a singular pleasure.
Thank you, angry LA driver.
But you're still angry, I see.
Well,
okay.
Breathe.
Plastic Axe says, David Alonso's different backgrounds and approaches to movies provide an excellent balance. Found them through the Stephanie Miller podcast. Oh. Terrific balance of the personal and critical. And Reddy, R-E-D-D-E-E, mm-hmm. says, Alonso and Dave are both individually insightful, smart, and witty critics, but their banter as a married couple, their passion about everything from the Apple to the Fast and the Furious films, and fine art, and politics, and television, and food, is what sets their program apart from other film review podcasts. Their unique takes on the week's new releases come with occasional left turns, constant left turns, into their married life that makes you feel like having a great conversation. You're having a great conversation with some of your smartest, funniest friends about the movies.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, thank you all.
God, we're amazing.
Apparently. Thank you all for that. If you want to leave us a review on iTunes, that would be great. It is how people find the show. And, of course, you can subscribe.
Five stars. There. Five stars.
And if you want to hear, as mentioned by Angry LA Driver, Linoleum Knife and Fork, Linoleum Nights, and LKTV, go to patreon.com/linoleumknife and subscribe to our show. Go listen to all of our friends on the internet. Go visit ChristyLemire.com and check out Canceled Too Soon with Bibbs and Whitney, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Schmoes Know, Comics Canon, and All Things Cozy, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Film Spotting SVU, and Secretly Timid. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at LinoleumCast. You can also leave us positive feedback in all the places that we stream, you know, like Stitcher Radio and thelounge.com and Podbean and Castbox and whatnot. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music, which
yes.
is awesome.
Yes.
And his stuff lives at bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. I was appreciating today, just like listening to the theme songs like that. That really has become part of our brand.
It's bouncy.
It's your Pavlovian signal that, like, this show is about to ensue. So it's doing all the things that a good theme song ought to. So thank you again for that, Blue. We appreciate it. If you want to contact us and get your letter read eventually, we're at Linoleum.
Maybe.
We're at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can also PayPal us $22 at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
If and you want a t-shirt.
For one of our amazing black t-shirts with Linoleum Knife in white letters.
Oh, and Jimmy Kincaid, by the way, you just bought a t-shirt, but your address is unclear, and I have messaged you. Please respond.
Let us know what's going
on. So I can send you your shirt.
Thank you, Jimmy. So that's it for us this week. We hope you've enjoyed it. We hope you'll be back next time. And until then,
goodbye.